Burns and Gambo on this Thursday afternoon. We're live from the Oxygen Community Studios here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. The Arizona Cardinals preseason finale coming up on Saturday, and then mercifully, the preseason is over.
Yes.
And we can start talking about
celebrate good times.
Sarah puts her arms up in victory. Yes. The preseason is over. Do you get the impression we're not big fans of preseason?
We usually get to a point through the summer. Normal. So this summer was different because of the Suns. But we get through a point when you're going through those dog days of summer, you can't wait for Cardinal camp to start.
Yes.
Because, okay, there it is. This year, I think because of the Suns carrying us through the summer, we got the Cardinal camp, and there's just not the major storylines this year that, you know, you would have wanted or expected. And it was like, okay, I just want to get to the regular season
and
now.
Certainly Cardinals training camp would have paled in comparison to talking about the Suns in the NBA Finals, right?
Already so much substance. It was like, what is this? We don't need you.
Preseason.
Play the regular season.
Camp. Exactly. Except, but now when the regular season comes around, now it becomes a totally different deal with the Cardinals. Now we can start seeing with our own eyes what Kyler Murray's prepared to do, what the addition of J.J. Watt means, what the addition of A.J. Green means, and we're looking forward very much to that. Mike Sando, name sounds familiar to you. For the longest time for ESPN, he covered specifically the NFC West. Now he writes and covers the general NFL for The Athletic. He wrote a story today about J.J. Watt and A.J. Green, and it was a good one.
Fantastic.
It really was. Mm-hmm. And I think, to me, the best nugget out of all of it wasn't even about those two players. It was about this division itself. No other NFL division has a better record in non-division games over the last five seasons than the NFC West. The same is true over the last 10 seasons. It's a very competitive division to reside in, which requires you to do bold things and to take a lot of risks.
And they point out some of those risks. The Rams trading Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford. The 49ers trading up in the draft to go get Trey Lance. The Seahawks firing their offensive coordinator after they won 12 football games.
Right.
You know, and then the Cardinals going out there and going to get J.J. Watt and A.J. Green, two veteran players who, when you look at the age of these players, and with J.J., it was the injuries because he hasn't played a whole lot. He's missed 32 of 64 games from 2016 to 19. And with A.J. Green, it's 3 years of not having 1,000 yards, and it's age. But it's like sometimes you got to take some chances. You've got to try to find some guys, veteran guys, that can help you and not just always younger players.
Especially in a division like this. In fact, I was listening to our colleagues Bickley and Murata when I was driving in. They had a story, Connor Orr, the NFL writer, I think he's with Sports Illustrated now, but that might be mistaken, went through literally week by week, game by game, and predicted every single outcome for the season. He had the Cardinals going 6-11. He had the Cardinals going winless in the NFC West. Now, I don't think that's accurate, but
what is he, the new Greg Bedard?
I bring that up as reflection of how difficult this division is and how challenging this division is and how bold you have to be. So Sando writes this piece about J.J. Watt and A.J. Green. On J.J. Watt in particular, he says, look, there certainly have been pass rushers as old as J.J. Watt, if not older, who have gone to new teams and been very successful, or who have had sacks at that age.
Yes, good list.
Yeah, it was a really good list, actually. There were really good names on that team, guys like Robert Mathis, Michael Strahan, Trace Armstrong, Reggie White, Chris Dolman, all guys in the last 20 or so years who have had 15 or more sacks at an age far older than J.J. Watt was.
Yeah. So it's not like it's unprecedented. If J.J. Watt goes out there and has a good year, it's not unprecedented. There's been several players at that age that have had good seasons. And I think it's the same thing for the wide receiver. I mean, they were looking at A.J. Green and say, okay, let's look at some other players. And they pointed out that there were quite a few wide receivers that ended up having good years. They talked about Joey Galloway and Terrell Owens and Jimmy Smith and Tim Brown and Derek Mason, guys that had 1,000-yard seasons, at that age. So when you get up to that age, it's not that there's not a lot. It's just it's harder for a guy like that to do it, but not unprecedented. It's not like one guy's done it or two. There's been several players that have had good seasons at that age. So it's not impossible for a player to have a good season at the age A.J. Green is at, or that the age J.J. Watt is at.
I mentioned Bickley and Murata. They had Mike Sando on their show earlier today, and he thinks of the two, Watt is actually the bigger what-if on this roster.
I think J.J. Watt is a bigger if in my mind, just the perception from afar
when you think about the last few years of his career. And then, like Steve Keim was saying, you watch and he played over 1,000 snaps, and only one guy in the league who's an edge defender played more. You know, so two of the last 3 years, he's played a full season. I think that's encouraging from his standpoint. Mm-hmm. And he actually played pretty well. They didn't do a 12-year deal with him where they're going to be totally upside down.
And he wrote about this in the piece, and Steve Keim is quoted in the piece as saying, man, we didn't see this at all on the tape when we watched it. But Mike Sando mentioned that the perception of some around the league is that J.J. Watt is caught up in his celebrity.
People see him as kind of someone who's gotten caught up a little in his celebrity and you know, the first guy to pop his helmet off when he scores and runs around. And maybe you know, hey, if there's a choice between cutting through that gap to get the sack and or playing the scheme, you know what, I'm going to cut through there. That's kind of the perception that right. people have gotten of him. Is it entirely accurate or fair? It's probably based on what people see, some of what they hear, the way people react when they see people celebrate the way he does, you know, that sort of thing.
Well,
it
yeah.
looks like me, right? So
yeah, without a
doubt.
I
don't know how that could be overblown, you know. To me, it's just interesting that they see him as somebody who can be a vocal leader on the team, because that's against that perception.
I'm blown away by that. I am absolutely
really?
Dumbfounded by that. I've never heard that about J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt's a me guy that goes, I'll take the sack instead of go for the sack. And if the guy runs for 20 yards, so what? I went for the sack because I'm a me guy. I'm looking for the camera. Where's the camera after a sack? I'm looking for the cameras. Where's the camera? Look at me. I didn't watch every Houston Texans football game. Okay. But I also never heard that from his time with the Texans. Like, that is relatively, that's why I'm dumbfounded by that comment.
I was a little surprised when I read it in the story, too.
Have you ever heard that?
No, I hadn't. I hadn't, but I don't talk to as many NFL personnel evaluators that Mike Sando does either. I mean, I hadn't really heard that or thought that about him, but I haven't spent a lot of time paying a lot of attention to J.J. Watt over the years, you know? So it is, I don't think he would have written it if somebody hadn't said it to him. If he hadn't heard from multiple people who had said it to him. But I'm with you. I had never really heard or read that about J.J. Watt over the last few years, that he was kind of caught up in his celebrity. Either way, Steve Keim is quoted in the story as saying, man, yeah. we put on the film, we saw a dog out there. We saw a guy who got after it out there.
I remember this, and I just looked it up because I remember this. There was a post by a guy named Josh Reed. Says, I spoke to someone who was on the Texans coaching staff with Watt, and the review wasn't glowing. He's selfish, only cared about his stats. He does a lot of things that hurts the defense. He hurt us more than he helped us, and finally, I wouldn't want him.
Who okay. said that? That's him again?
That was in a – I remembered this. It was Josh Reed.
Former coach. Okay.
Posted it about a former coach of the Texans saying that – he didn't say who the coach was. I spoke to someone on the Texans coaching staff, and – he's, you know, speaking out about J.J. Watt. But that's the only thing that I kind of remember. Outside of that, I don't really remember anything about J.J. Watt being a me guy.
Yeah, it was on both players, a really interesting article from Mike Sando today. College football's around the corner. You can text the word Sparky to 620-620 and then kick off the college football season with your favorite Arizona sports hosts and special guests for our Valley Virtual Series. It's presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. Plus, we'll be giving away college football tickets as well. Again, text the word Sparky to 620-620. There's still more than a month left to the Diamondback season, and according to Torrey Lovello, we're about to see a change for the D-backs the rest of the season. We'll tell you what that change is coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the new Sonic Crave Cheeseburger for a limited time only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
All right, Diamondbacks baseball coming up at 4:05 this afternoon. You will hear it on ESPN 620, though as always I promise you we'll keep you completely updated on what's going on that game if you keep it right here on the Burns and Gambo Show. The Diamondbacks, after avoiding the sweep last night against the Pirates, thank goodness, on their way to Philadelphia now, taking on the Phillies for the first of four tonight against Philadelphia. We'll get into the pitching matchup and touch briefly on what happened last night with the Arizona Diamondbacks. But since we're talking D-backs baseball, let's start with what's probably making the most news about the Arizona Diamondbacks. That was some comments from Troy Lovello pregame yesterday about, as the season starts to wind down, I think there's roughly 30 games to go, give or take. I'd have to look at the numbers to be sure, but it's close to that. Torrey was asked if it's getting about time for younger guys to get more playing time on this roster. And here's what the manager had to say.
I'm looking to change that a little bit. I'm looking to change that percentage first by having the conversation with the veterans and let them know what's going on, and then allowing the younger players to go out there and get the increased workload. So I think there's a method to that. I might have my own personal beliefs, and I think rather than just totally jump the shark and flip it all in one day, I think there's a gradual buildup, and that's necessary for a young player to continue learning at the right pace. So I think we're ready to take it to the next level in a couple of different situations.
I think you got to do that. I think you look at certain guys like Christian Walker, like, you know, role player off the bench, but getting all the starts. No, David Peralta, I think the same thing. He's got 1 year left on his contract. I want to I know you want some veterans in, you're trying to win these games, but at this point, and I know playing spoiler is important to do, but you got to see more of the young guys. You have to. Because I like what I've seen out of quite a few of them. Rojas has played well. Varsho has played well. Pavin Smith has played well. You want to continue to see these young guys get opportunities.
Yeah, there was a story in The Athletic from Zach Buchanan, and he pointed out that since the beginning of August, you mentioned Christian Walker. I'll throw in another, Asdrubal Cabrera. That Walker and Cabrera have started more games than rookie infielder Drew Ellis has, who was a former second-round pick the team called up after trading Eduardo Escobar, a month ago. Ellis has started 12 games in August. Walker and Cabrera have started 17 and 16 games in August. Josh Van Meter has started only 10 games in August.
It's got to change.
Dalton Varsho has started only 14 games in August. I read this story.
Varsho's playing a lot more now, though. He's starting to hit the ball really well, and what do you have, homers in three straight games. I've seen him in a lineup just about every day recently.
Yeah, recently, more towards the middle to the end of the month where we are now. I'll be honest with you. And Torrey, look, there's a process to this. We can't just flip the switch and play younger guys. I kind of need this to be a gradual thing. I read this story, and my first reaction was I'm sort of surprised there wasn't more of a mandate from management to do this sooner, you know, to not wait until there were, and I just did the math, there's 34 games left in the season. Not wait until there were 34 games left in the season to start reducing Christian Walker's playing time, Asdrubal Cabrera's playing time in name of the young. I find it interesting that it took this long for there to be it's time to start playing some younger guys. I mean, it's been time to play the younger guys for 2 months.
Yeah,
now.
I think when you're playing the Padres and you're trying to win those games, you may feel like the veterans give you a better chance to win. But I get that. But it's the Phillies, you know, they're 5 games out right now. They're trying to get into the playoffs. They're a 500 team. You want to beat them, and so you feel like you owe a commitment to the rest of baseball to play hard. But nobody's going to fault the Diamondbacks for playing with their younger guys right now.
But do you owe a commitment to Major League Baseball? To
some managers feel like that. Like, I need to go try to beat this team because that's what they would do. If I was the Braves or the Mets and I'm playing the Phillies, I would want them to play hard against those teams. So there's a feeling with many managers that way.
Yeah, I think just because you're not playing Christian Walker doesn't mean you're not playing hard. You know, just because you're not playing Asdrubal Cabrera doesn't mean you're not playing hard. And I understand what you're saying, and I understand it's kind of one of the long-standing sort of traditional beliefs about baseball. Man, I've got 34 games left to be able to try to evaluate these younger guys. Those are precious at-bats. I mean, so precious. Actually, Christian Walker, in the story I saw about it, he's quoted in the story. And he's being very professional about it. Quote, "What I understand? Yes, from a business perspective, I would understand them taking at-bats away from me.
Yes.
But I would hate it. I want those at-bats, close quote.
Sure. I mean, he is, I believe he's arbitration eligible, Christian Walker. And I don't know what the Diamondbacks are going to do with him. I don't see him. Listen, I like him as a role player off the bench.
I do too.
I don't like him as an everyday first baseman. But I like him as a guy coming off the bench that could, you know, you could get 250 at-bats, 300 at-bats in a season. I mean, I got no problem with Christian. I don't think that he should be out of the league. I just don't want him as my starting first baseman.
Yeah, he kind of tricked us a little bit that first year post Paul Goldschmidt. He put up decent numbers that first year, and to the point where you thought, hey, okay, you can live. Were they huge, crazy power numbers? No, but were they good enough to make you think you could live with him getting the majority of the at bats? And he's just never really been able to duplicate that ever since. Yeah, I just think. These were words we should have heard at a Torrey at the beginning of August and not at the end of August, no matter what sort of, competitive integrity rules you might have been violating around the sport of baseball. The Diamondbacks needed to play Josh Van Meter more than 10 games in August. They needed to play Ellis more games. They need to call up Seth Beer and give him some looks.
It's a great call. Seth Beer was one of those guys, Astros trade, right?
Yep.
That they need to take a look at. You need to get a long look at these guys right now and get them some experience. I mean, that experience that they get now may help them for next year.
All right, talking about tonight's game now and your pitching matchup, which is brought to you by the Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURGSimpson.com. Good lawyers changing lives. Matt Moore, the lefty, gets the start for Philly tonight. He's 2-3. With a 5.93 ERA.
Yeah, they had to scratch Zach Eflin. He was supposed to start today, but his knee flared up, so they go to Moore. So Eflin, who was supposed to start today against the D-backs, he got scratched because of the knee, so they end up going to Matt Moore, the left-hander.
Zach Gallen gets the start for the Diamondbacks.
I'm fascinated. Zach Gallen has 7 wins in his Major League career. He's pitched for 4 years. He's got 7. I am absolutely fascinated. Blown away by that, to be honest with you. He has 7 total wins in his Major League career. You think, how could that be, right? He's got to have 40 wins in his career. He's been pitching for 4. Like, 7 total wins for Zach Gallen. He is the master of the no decision.
Yeah.
He is the master of not getting decisions in games.
This is not exactly breaking sports news first.
Yeah.
The two teams he's most recently pitched on have not been very good. Have
7
not won.
Wins?
I know, but you don't. It just goes to show that a starting pitcher is not the only reason why you win a baseball game. You know, you're dependent on a lot of other things. Bullpen. Offense, things like that.
I feel you. It's just amazing to me.
Last year's Diamondbacks team stunk. This year's team stinks even more than last year's stunk. And they're just not winning a lot of games.
Guy might be your ace. He's got, I mean, even this year, he's got 1 win this year. He's pitched in plenty of games. He's got 1 win.
Yeah, well, the last outing he had against Colorado was very good. He had not been good for really much of the year statistically, and he's kind of been in and out of the rotation. So he gets the start tonight. Your MLB standings, they're brought to you by PNC Bank, financial tools and tech to help make things easier as we look around baseball. The Giants, 2.5 game lead over the LA Dodgers. Man, the Padres are now 15 games back.
What happened from San Francisco? What the hell happened?
15-20 since the All-Star break.
AJ Pollock, big home run last night to beat him, right?
Yeah.
The Padres just fell apart.
And then if you look at the upside-down standings, the Baltimore Orioles, they've won 2 straight games now. They have a 2-game lead, for lack of a better word, over the Diamondbacks for the worst record in Major League Baseball. Let's get you a key to tonight's game.
Listen, man, I'm a huge key master.
I am the key master.
D-backs Keys to the Game, brought to you by Sell2Sands. Take away the hassle of selling a vehicle yourself. Go to Sell2Sands.com today.
Phillies started this month. They had won 8 straight. They're 4-10 since then, really struggling and not scoring runs. 2.9 runs per game. So what you don't want to hear, though, is you don't want a one-run game. The Phillies are actually 23-17 in one-run games, while the D-backs are 7-24. Try to avoid those one-run games. They don't seem to fare well for Arizona, and Philadelphia is actually pretty good at them.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, he has been, though, the head coach in waiting behind Herm Edwards. He's been thought of as the head coach in waiting behind Herm Edwards. But considering the investigation surrounding the ASU program and its coaching staff, is Antonio Pierce still the front runner to take over down the road in Tempe? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Back here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, 1 week from tonight. ASU football opens their season against Southern Utah.
Let's go.
Isn't there some college football this weekend?
Yes, there is.
What do we have this weekend? Four games, five games?
Nebraska versus Illinois, which is an interesting game in terms of, because I think Brett Bielema is now at Illinois.
Yeah.
And then you have Scott Frost, who Nebraska has their own NCAA investigation going on.
Yes.
UConn, Fresno State, Hawaii and UCLA, UTEP and New Mexico State, and then Southern Utah and San Jose State. So a lot of Mountain West.
I miss Nebraska being good. I miss them being good.
I know you do.
I do.
Nebraska
does too. It's the best team that I've ever.
Should have never left the Big 12.
They should have never
kings
left
of
the conference
Big 12. Right now.
I mean, when was the last time that they were relevant? Really, when was the last time they were relevant? Scott Frost has been a disaster. Mike Riley was a disaster. Bo Pelini was okay.
It's been a long time.
Callahan was a joke, right? Bill Callahan, I don't think he did very. He was terrible.
It's been a long time since Nebraska football's been relevant.
Solich.
A long time.
Osborne to Solich. And Solich was good. It wasn't Osborne, but Solich was good. But, man, it was so great. They were so great in the 90s and even, like, some of the – like, and to have Nebraska not be relevant in football is just – I hope they get back.
Sarah, will you do me a favor? Just real quick. Look up the Labor Day weekend games, because I know there are always a few biggies on Labor Day weekend.
All the good stuff, yeah.
And I'm just curious what some of the good ones are on Labor Day. Well, Jordan looks like he knows.
Well,
what
I mean, I think in the Pac-12, what's interesting, even though I don't think they have a shot in it, is UCLA and LSU are playing one another.
Okay, so they're UCLA versus LSU on, like, because the Labor Day weekend is kind of the opening weekend of college football. You see any good matchups, any good games?
Ohio State, Minnesota will be interesting. Penn State and Wisconsin on Saturday the 4th. Stanford, K-State, Alabama, and number 14, Miami.
Ooh, okay.
All right. I'm just curious. I know that's a big college football weekend.
Saban loves that young quarterback at Alabama.
Sunday college football game, Notre Dame and Florida State.
Oh.
And then on Monday, the one game listed is Louisville and Ole Miss.
Did you mention Georgia-Clemson?
Oh, I did not. Where's Georgia-Clemson?
Oh, that's the biggest one of the whole group right there.
That's number five versus number three.
Okay, yeah, that's the best game of the whole docket.
Is that one on Monday?
I don't see that on Monday.
That
Where
one's
is
on
that?
Saturday, September 4th.
Okay. Wow. Oh, yeah, that's a huge list.
Clemson-Georgia. Woo! Okay. All right. College football to watch. And then, of course, ASU. In the midst of what is their most anticipated season in many, many years and thought to be one of their best roster in many, many, many years, and B, all at the same time, an NCAA investigation that, according to reports, actually started today, like officially started today, with interviewing some of the players who might have been involved as the NCAA tries to get to the bottom of it. It's going to be a weird season to navigate for ASU football because they should be very good. We just don't know how this investigation is going to impact them, and we certainly don't know what the future of the program holds depending on what this investigation finds. We had long thought that Antonio Pierce was the coach in waiting for ASU from Herm deciding to retire, whenever that might be. Now, with this scandal, we don't know what the future of Herm is. We certainly don't know what the future of Antonio Pierce is. You emailed me a list today of like 20 coaches around college football that, like are up-and-comers who could be head coaches soon. Antonio Pierce wasn't on the list.
Not on the list. There were 17 jobs that opened up last season. Nine of them went to guys that had prior FBS head coaching experience, guys like Steve Sarkisian and Terry Bowden, Butch Jones. The remaining eight jobs, four went to defensive assistants, three to offensive assistants, and one to a coach who was a special teams guy. So you start to look at, okay, let's look at who's going to be available this year. And they mentioned Tony Elliott, the Clemson offensive coordinator, Brent Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator. So Clemson could lose both of their coordinators. They mentioned Texas A&M's DC, Mike Elko, Alabama's offensive coordinator, Bill O'Brien. You remember Bill O'Brien?
I do.
Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator for Oklahoma, which some people feel could win the whole thing this year. Notre Dame's D.C., Marcus Freeman. Georgia's D.C., Dan Lenning. Georgia's O.C., Todd Monken. I'll just do 10 of them.
Okay.
Wisconsin's D.C., Jim Leonard. And Oregon's offensive coordinator, Joe Moorhead. There's a list of 10 other guys that could get the whole head coaching jobs, but none of them. You know, the only ties to the Pac-12, I see Graham Harrell, the USC offensive coordinator. But I don't see any, I don't see any of the, there's no ASU guys on here. There's no Antonio Pierce on there. So I was just wondering, this is a good list to just keep, take a look at. Because if this thing goes south for ASU, and we don't know that it will, but if it goes south, this is a list of 20 college football assistants that Pete Dammel feels are next in line to get head coaching jobs.
So what does it say that he's not on this list? You know, what does it say?
Well, I think it says a lot that he's not on this list.
Can I just add one name that I don't think you, if you said it, I didn't hear you say it.
Go ahead.
Steve Wilks is on the list.
I did not mention Steve Wilks.
Steve Wilks is on the list.
I did not mention Steve Wilks, the former Cardinals head coach.
Defensive coordinator, Missouri, another former NFL head coach who ended up in the SEC. Wilks has already given Missouri's scheme and recruiting a significant jolt. At 52, there's still plenty of time for Wilks to get a head coaching chance in college. Interesting that he's on the list, too. I don't know. I know what it means that Antonio Pierce isn't on the list. I just don't know what it means, if that makes any sense. I know why he's not on the list. I don't know how you could put him on the list. You know, I don't know how you could put him on the list when the future of everything at ASU is in such doubt right now. You know, how long is Herm going to be able to survive this? Is Antonio Pierce going to be able to survive this? Even if they do and Herm retires, is Antonio Pierce now your coach in waiting? Does he have to come out of this clean as a whistle for him to still hold on to that designation? These are
probably
answers. These are all questions I don't know the answers to, but it makes for a very muddy future for ASU football because
the succession plan was everything was in place.
It was so easy.
Herm was going to coach this year and then next year, and then Antonio was going to take over as the head coach. I mean, everything was put in place. The recruiting was going great. They got a team this year that could win the whole thing, could very well win the Pac-12 South, play for the Pac-12 championship, maybe even win that. John Wilner's got him in that game against Oregon. You know, you got a team that's very senior-laden on the defensive side of the ball, two great running backs, and a fantastic young quarterback. The wide receiver group is a question mark because there's not a lot returning, but it's a team that really could do extremely well. Now, all of a sudden, this investigation throws the whole thing into a flux. We just don't know. We just really don't know. If Antonio Pierce is not the future at ASU, then you're probably doing an outside search. You're
probably
going to be looking at all of these coaches right there and see who wants to take over the program. And you do wonder if ASU gets dinged a little bit, you wonder if some of those coaches may be like, this is not the right time to take that job.
And it's just a question of how much they get dinged. I mean, look, if Antonio Pierce comes out of this and all of the allegations against him are disproven, and there's nothing significant.
I hope for that.
And a lot of people do. I hope for that, too. But if he comes out of this clean, then he's there. Then the original timeline and the original plan is probably back in play. Herm at some point retires over the next couple of years. Antonio Pierce at some point takes it over. But if there is any sort of punishment that comes down, or if Antonio Pierce, if it goes from allegedly to he is implicated in this and there's proof against him, then the whole plan at ASU just gets turned upside down
on them. I think that this very well could be Herm's last year. If Jaden Daniels leaves with all those seniors on the defensive end, if they've got to rebuild a little bit, I mean, I think that this is his shot. I would not be surprised if this is Herm's last year. I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised at that.
You can text us your thoughts on ASU and this crazy upcoming season on the FanDuel text line. 620-620 is where you can text us at any time on the FanDuel text line. As always, we'll read the best ones on the air. When we come back on this Thursday edition, Kyle Shanahan says he knows who his starting quarterback is going to be for the 49ers in Week 1. Is there any chance the rookie Trey Lance has beat out Jimmy G? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Kyle Shanahan yesterday. Yeah, I think I know who our starting quarterback is going to be.
I got a pretty good idea, but as you guys can see with everything, I don't know our schedule a couple days from now. I've always had a pretty good idea. But, you know, there's lots of days between now and then at every position.
I mean, Jacksonville named their starter. Denver named their starter. He's not ready to name the starter. The starter is probably going to be Garoppolo. I think it's going to be Garoppolo. He's taken the most reps with the first team, and Trey Lance has had some growing pains, which, I mean, let's not forget, Trey Lance played one game last year in college.
Right.
I played one game. Hasn't played a whole lot of football. I mean, he got drafted basically on what he did back in 2019 for North Dakota State. not what he did last year, because he played one football game last year. He threw 30 passes last year for 149 yards, two touchdowns and an interception. One game is all he played. So he may not be ready. Now, they have kind of hinted that, you know, they'll work Trey Lance in, you know, throughout the games that Garoppolo plays, that there's probably some packages and they'll work him in and get him in the mix a little bit, take advantage of his ability to run and, you know, try to get him ready to be the full-time starter. Look, they invested three first-round picks in the guy. They did. Three first-round picks they invested. He's going to be the guy, but it may not be right away. I would expect Garoppolo gets that job.
I would expect he would, too. Jimmy G was asked yesterday about Shanahan's comments.
Kyle said he had a pretty good idea to be the starting quarterback in week one. Do you have a pretty good idea?
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea.
You're smiling about it. That must mean something, right?
It's whatever he decides, yeah. I have a pretty good idea. I'm pretty happy with where I'm at right now and everything, and just the offense as a whole. But yeah, Kyle's the head man. He'll make the call.
Yeah, I think Jimmy G's a starting quarterback based off of those answers. Really, when you're looking at this division, okay, San Francisco in some ways is going to be the most compelling team to watch all year long for this simple reason. That is a team that's got Super Bowl aspirations and a quarterback controversy at the same time. You know how hard that is to do at the same time? You know how hard it is to have a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and a quarterback controversy in the same season? That never happens.
Green Bay has Super Bowl aspirations. They don't have a quarterback controversy. Kansas City, they don't have a quarterback controversy. Tampa Bay, they don't have a quarterback controversy. Just trying to think of teams that you might say, okay, that team is ready to
Baltimore.
They don't have a quarterback controversy. Yeah, I mean, I get it.
It's beyond unusual. I don't even know if I've really thought about it enough to put it into this kind of context until just now. But how weird is it to think that here's a team that everybody believes is more than capable of winning 11, 12, 13 football games, and yet they might switch quarterbacks after, what, week 3, week 4, week 8, week 9? I mean, nobody knows. Nobody knows exactly how it's going to go there. It's such an essential position. It's the crucial, essential position. And to have uncertainty at that spot and yet still be in the same breath as all those teams that might win Super Bowls, that's weird. It's not supposed to work like that, ever. It's not ever supposed to be like that. So how Kyle Shanahan managed it. And here's something else. And I can't remember where I was reading this about Kyle Shanahan. Not that he's in any danger of losing his job at all. Man, he's been in San Francisco 4 years now. 6 wins, 4 wins. 13 wins.
Super Bowl.
6 wins.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know. One Super Bowl.
Second year Garoppolo got hurt.
I know. Oh, I know. I'm just saying, maybe it was our Cliff Kingsbury conversation yesterday. Kyle Shanahan has had more than the benefit of the doubt when it comes to San Francisco and his ability. And yeah, getting them to the Super Bowl in year 3 has just about everything to do with that. But nobody looks at Kyle Shanahan's career record of 29 wins, 35 losses, and holds that against him in any way, shape, or form, right?
No.
He's considered a genius. He's considered one of the best coaches in the NFL, hands down.
Yeah.
He's 6 games below 500 for his career coaching record, but nobody ever talks about Kyle Shanahan as anything other than a certifiable genius as an NFL head coach.
Injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, just injuries. Last year, injuries. Second season injuries. When he had a full team with no injuries, he won 13 games. The team went to the damn Super Bowl.
Yep. Yeah.
Right?
It's the 100% truth. And last year, I don't think there was a team in the NFL that lost more player games to injuries than San Francisco
right.
did. I mean, remember times when the Cardinals would play them, and they were just decimated, absolutely decimated with injuries. Back to the quarterback front, Mike Sando was a guest on the Bickley and Marotta show today. They asked him about the quarterback battle in San Francisco. And he said, man, in that case, everything is on the table.
I think anything's on the table. Like, it wouldn't shock me at all if they cut Garoppolo before the season. That wouldn't shock me.
Wow.
And I just decided that's probably what I would do if I were them. But I think when you have a coach who's the offensive coach and you know, he may want to have both options. I could see him starting Garoppolo to start the year. But there's no question in my mind that they're going to start Trey Lance this season. I think the only question is how soon is it? We don't really know that. I mean, they may not have decided that. They've been a little bit of a tough team to figure this offseason. Everyone guessed Mac Jones. It really wasn't Mac Jones. So it's hard to just say what they will do, but I'm confident that Trey Lance is going to start games this year. And if I had to pick a date, I would say it's in the first half of the season with an outside chance. It's right from the start.
Not if you're winning. Super Bowl aspirations. Garoppolo, you get off to a good start. You can't.
No, you can't.
I mean, again, with this kid, he played one game last year in college. One game.
Yeah.
Like, he's had a lot of mistakes. He's not ready to lead that team to a Super Bowl in his rookie season. Now, if Garoppolo doesn't play well, you can make the argument, okay, let's get him in there and let's see. I think that there'll be packages for him. I think he'll play. I think the only way he starts is if Garoppolo fails. How are you going
to
pull Jimmy G out if you're winning football games?
It'd be hard.
Hey,
we're
5-1. We decided we're not going to play Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to go to the kid. What?
Yeah.
How are you going to look at your team and justify that?
I'm trying to think about quarterback controversies around the league. How many do we have left? We've got New England. We have an undecided starter in New England. We have an undecided starter in San Francisco. We have an undecided starter in New Orleans. We have an undecided starter in... not Chicago. They keep saying it's Andy Dalton.
They've already said it's Andy Dalton.
Everybody
right?
wants Justin Fields, but they keep saying it's Andy Dalton. I think that's... now that the Denver situation has been resolved, I think that's all that's left. We know Zach Wilson's starting in New York for the Jets. I think...
well, Cobb Skelton, the battle... oh, wait, no, sorry.
Is Cobb running for Tempe City Council against John Skelton?
Yeah, I think he should. If I was Cobb, I'd put my name in. If I was Kevin Cobb, I'd be like,
you know what? I beat you before in a battle. I'll do it again. Let's go.
I'm going to run for Tempe, whatever it is. Just me against you. How funny would that be?
That would be Cobb Skelton. The battle.
The battle for, what are they for?
I think it's City Council. Tempe.
And Gambo would have no choice but to voice those commercials.
Oh, of course.
For that campaign, for whoever's campaign is.
For anybody who doesn't know, it would be chef's kiss good. For anybody who doesn't know, years and years and years, if you wonder why we do that, we were running training camp promos, and the signature moment of those promos was Gambo's voice. Cobb Skelton, the battle. And we heard it nonstop every day for a month.
Is there any way we still even have that promo, Jordan?
We've looked. Jordan's looked.
I've looked in my full. I can check with some few other people, but I feel like it has lost itself to the annals of history.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Isn't there a way to Google it or something? Or
it is
Cobb Skelton, the battle.
I mean, we just got – that was almost a perfect reproduction of it right there.
Yeah.
It was – Sarah, it was obnoxious.
Oh, my God.
How often we played that promo, because it was seriously the only thing we had to talk about with that team.
Can't you just plug in your Apple ID and find it or something like that?
Doesn't work.
A way to get an old photo.
An Instagram story.
Is it in a cloud? Something's got to be in a cloud. I don't know which cloud it's in, but it's got to be in one of those. What year was that?
I think 2013.
Did they name clouds by years? Go to the 2013 cloud.
It doesn't work.
Rainy, partially sunny. Find that cloud and go get it. It's got to be out there.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, I'm going to endeavor to explain clouds to Gambo. And we're also going to talk about the Pac-12's announcement today. They will not be expanding anytime soon. Does that decision, what does it mean for the survival of the Big 12?
Sorry.
That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.